We are going to be continuing in the Kuzari. We're still in the first essay, and we're up to page 81 in the Feldheim Kuzari. We're beginning with paragraph 60. And we're at a good place to resume, because the rabbi, and for those of you who may be attending for the first time, just a recap of the Kuzari is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's major work on Jewish philosophy, in which he recreates a dialogue between a rabbi and a new convert to Judaism, the king of the Khazars, who is an actual historical figure, and presents the arguments as to why Judaism is the one correct faith. That's really the subtitle of Kuzari, is In Defense of the Despised Faith. And here he brings proofs and arguments for the truths of Judaism, for the truths of Torah. And that's really what the book is all about. I just noticed, just doing a cursory search on YouTube, there's a huge number of videos that are posted by anti-Semitic groups today about the Khazars. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's just mushroomed, you know, because of the opportunities that people that are filled with hate have to get their message across on the internet. Now, the claim that Ashkenazi Jews are descended from the Khazars has become such a popular claim that it's all over the internet. All of this has been debunked by the fact that the genetics indicate that Ashkenazi and Sephardic Jews have more in common than other ethnic groups. So that it's very unlikely that the majority of Ashkenazi Jews are descended from foreigners like the Khazars. But in any event, these are the same Khazars that we're talking about over here. There was a historical nation that existed known as the Khazars. They converted en masse to Judaism. And when the Khazar kingdom fell, they basically dispersed and assimilated into other Jewish communities. Or they lost their faith because they were overrun, and the national faith at the time was given to shifts based upon what was most expedient and convenient for the empire at the time. In any event, let's get back to the topic at hand. The rabbi was using a line of argumentation to prove that the account of the Torah was accurate. And the plausibility of the Torah's accuracy is based upon certain accounts that are contained in the Torah that no one seems to dispute. There seems to be sort of an accepted across the board among various different cultures that the stories about Adam and Eve and the stories of the flood and the story about the Tower of Babel, these accounts all seem to be universally accepted across multiple different cultures, and certain standards and conventions that we all maintain today go back to the fact that originally there was one family of man that started with one man and one woman, and they propagated and passed on these traditions. So the fact that we all have one convention of counting, he said as an example, that we all use the decimal system. We count up to 9 and then we start all over again with a 1 and a 0. Where does that come from? How do we all have the same convention of counting? He says that comes from the fact that we all really started as one nation. We all have a convention when it comes to the number of days in a week. We all have a 7-day week. We may not always agree as far as what the first day and the last day of the week is, but we all agree that there are 7 days to the week. That convention also is a somewhat of a proof that we all originated from the same family. We all started with one unit, with one man, one woman, and then things spread from there. So there's a certain plausibility to the account that's contained in the book of Genesis as far as how the family of man began to grow. So, therefore, that's where we're at. It's the plausibility of the stories contained in the Torah, specifically the stories contained within the book of Bereishis. That's really where we're holding. So let's find out where we're going to go with this. What's going to be the challenge of the Khazar king to this argument? And we just need a volunteer today to read for us. Paragraph number 60. Anyone want to volunteer as our reader? Please, go right ahead.
The Khuzari said, but isn't your argument undermined by what is recorded in Indian history? In India, they have identified places and edifices that are hundreds of thousands of years old, built well before your account of creation.
So we're going to the east now, and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi lives at a time, he's living in Europe, and Western civilization is quite advanced and respected, and there seems to be this, we talked about this word before, convivencia, which is like this sort of coming together of all the different cultures within Europe. Jews, Muslims, and Christians seem to have some kind of cooperative cultural integration with one another, and everything we seem to agree upon about the way that creation came about. But if we move to the east and we go to India, we find that there are different stories that are emanating from the East about the origins of mankind. And so doesn't that undermine your suggestion that there's a consensus about the stories of the Bible and how Adam and Eve got started? If we look at stories that are emanating from India, we find that the history dates back thousands of years, long before you say that Adam and Eve came into creation. According to Indian history, the world is much older than 5,700 and whatever number of years, or 5,600 or whatever number of years that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is discussing. Yes? So what are you going to do about that? They claim to have a historical record that dates much further back than Adam and Eve. How do you reconcile that? It's a fair question. It's a question that is valid 8 centuries ago. And it's only more valid as we live in the 21st century and we have archaeological findings that date back thousands upon thousands of years before Adam and Eve of civilizations that existed. They may not have had very advanced technology, but we know that there are cities that have been unearthed from the periods well dating back before Adam and Chava, before Adam and Eve. So how do we reconcile that with the fact that Adam and Eve are supposed to have been the first people who ever lived? Now you and I may have to come up with a different answer from Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. We may have to, because we have different archaeological information today than what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi had in his time. But let's see how he responds to the challenge, and let's see how it resonates with us.
The rabbi responded, my belief would be undermined if this information came from a truly reputable nation or from a universally accepted book which contained concrete numerical data. But that is not the case with India. They are a wayward people who do not possess any solid facts about history. Much of what they allege is meant to confound other faiths, just as they do with their images, their idols, and the practices that they claim are helping them. They ridicule anyone who says that he has a book written by God. As far as their erudition, they have written only a few books, and those were written by only a few individuals. Only the feeble-minded would be beguiled by some of their astrology books, which record events dating back tens of thousands of years, or by works like the
Nabataean
Book of Agriculture. That particular work mentions the name of Jambushar, Sagrit, and Roani, who purportedly lived before Adam. They even allege that Jambushar was Adam's teacher, among other such claims.
Outlandish. Absurd. How can anyone possibly believe in these things, right? That's really what Rabbi Yehuda Levi's response is that we're dealing with an undisciplined, primitive nation, and therefore their historical record is not reliable. That's the simple answer. Just because someone has a certain culture has a claim doesn't mean that it's a reliable claim. If they don't have a systematized method of historical chronicles, and therefore you can't rely on them. And not only that, he says, furthermore, the whole function of Indian culture, the Hindus and the Buddhists and whoever's existing at this time, is to polemicize and to deconstruct monotheistic faiths. And so if that's the case, then you can't believe them, because a lot of what they do is to try and undermine the stories of the Bible. And if their whole objective is to undermine the stories of the Bible, then that's, you have every reason to believe that that their stories are not credible, that what they're trying to do is directly contradict the stories of the Bible so that they can undermine monotheism. Okay, so therefore, unreliable. Now, the Nabataean Book of Agriculture. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi had special exposure to the Nabataean Book of Agriculture. As I mentioned, this is also, the Nabataean Book of Agriculture is also cited by the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim. If you take a look at footnote 53, he says that it had been translated into Arabic. There was a very famous 10th century alchemist and agriculturalist whose name was Ibn Wahshia, and he had translated this book from the Nabataean language, which is an ancient form of Aramaic, and it is a book on the occult, superstition, and idol worship, and it is called the Book of Agriculture because the Nabataeans believed that the only way to successfully work the soil was to first appease the celestial gods, the sun and the stars. The Nabataeans were a Semitic people who lived in the ancient territory of Edom and Transjordan. Their recorded history begins as early as the 4th century BCE, and they faded out of history with the advent of Islam. But there was, during the times of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, based upon this very popular work, a belief among many people, even within the Islamic and Jewish communities, that there were human beings that were living before Adam HaRishon, and that Adam was only given credit as the first man, but there were other people alive during his time. Now, you and I are going to be faced with a dilemma. The dilemma is that we don't have the luxury that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi had, was just to simply discredit accounts of civilization that may have existed before 5,772 years ago, because the claims that are made are by people who are primitive or undisciplined. We have actually archaeological data that does go back beyond 5,772 years of ancient civilizations that did exist, had tools, had some level of technology, and seemed to be functioning well before the year of creation, as is recorded in the Torah. So how do we reconcile that? How do you reconcile that? What do you say? What say you? How do you deal with the fact that science provides us with information about ancient civilizations that were around long before 5,772 years ago? We say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Bonei Olamot U'Machariban, so it's altogether possible that our world is part of a series of many other worlds, that really Hashem created other worlds before ours, destroyed them, and only around 6,000 years ago did He create our new world and put a man and a woman in the Garden of Eden, and that's it. So that's certainly plausible. That's certainly a possibility. Let me ask you this question. If you look at the story of creation and you look at the story of Cain and Hevel, Cain is concerned because he says, "B'hayachol motzi'i yahargei." He's very concerned. He says, after he kills his brother Abel, he says, no one's going to want to have anything to do with me. Anyone who finds me is going to want to kill me because I've been branded or I've been labeled now as an outcast, as a murderer. And so God places upon him the mark of Cain, as we know. So who was Cain so concerned about? Anyone who finds me is going to want to kill me. Isn't he, after all, aren't all these people his children and grandchildren? How many people could there possibly have been at the time when Cain is cast out with a handful of people? I mean, couldn't he like send out a memo to everyone, you know, the dozen people that may have existed at the time, saying, it's me, your grandfather, or your father, Lee, or your uncle, please don't bother me, leave me alone, I just want to get some rest. How many people was Cain concerned about? Is that a legitimate question? So how have you understood that story? How have you understood that?
Well, I think that But even in this case, even if he sent everybody memo, the deaf guy didn't get the whatever who killed
Levin, yes,
didn't,
yeah, yes.
didn't get the memo.
Yeah, right, right, right. Sure, that's true. Lameth eventually does kill Cain. Yeah. But according to the Medrash, it was a big mistake because he was blind. He didn't know what to...
Yeah, right.
So anyway, I don't think it's heresy to suggest that there were other humanoid individuals that lived before Adam and Chava. They just didn't have the spirit of Hashem, B'Tselem Elokim, that we would call the image of God embedded within them. They lacked a certain level of evolutionary perfection to be called human beings. But they were beings nonetheless that possessed intelligence. And they were able to function in some way and to build some kind of primitive society around them. But Adam and Chava were the first people who had Kodesh Baruch Hu Vayipach Be'apov Nishmas Chayim Vayi Adam Nefesh Chaya, that Adam HaRishon was the first of this on an evolutionary process or cycle which God created specifically to be able to bring the Torah to the world and to advance humanity that has possesses Torah and morality and monotheism and ethics and self-awareness and purpose and so forth.
Might yes. be another way that the Mabul, after Noach, the Mabul, everything was destroyed. Like all the human the life, all the human life were destroyed by the Mabul. So the building stayed. The building stayed in the Mabul, right?
Yeah, no, but we're talking about before the Mabul. We're saying
okay,
that...
Okay, so they, no, but they were alive and they were people, right?
Where did those people come from? That's really our question. Yeah. Adam and Chava are the first people. Where are all these other people coming from? Yeah. So this is right. So this is even pre Mabul. So again, it could be, as you suggested before, HaKadosh Baruch Hu borei olamot bonei olamot macharivan, that God was these were from previous iterations of creation that were wiped out, and God started again with Adam and Chava. Or it's altogether possible that Adam and Chava are the first human beings with that sense of purpose that is described in the Torah, but there are other, Homo sapiens that exist, but they'll not have the Tzelem Elokim embedded within them. Yes?
Well, in those generations, they lived for hundreds of years. So, I mean, over the course of hundreds of years, you could have had a tremendous propagation of humankind, you know?
True.
So
that's true.
It just seems to contradict the story of Bereshit, that God created man is man and animal, and evolution is just a theory. So I mean, that's sort of.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that Adam and Chava necessarily evolved from lower beings. I'm saying that they could have been an independent creation from Hashem, but that there were other Homo sapien beings that existed. The Medrash itself describes that in the Mabul, God destroyed monkey beings that had the similarity to humans, that had human form, but that were monkey-like in nature. The Medrash itself describes that there were missing links that were not allowed to survive the flood. Yeah.
Aren't we told not to mention primordial woman as well?
We're told not
we're
to
not,
mention...
We're not discussing the Lilith.
Yes, we're not. I'm not following you. I'm sorry. Okay. You have to get
well, there is a mention of something which was before Adam, before Chava.
Yes, there is a medrash that talks about Lilith. Yes.
And we're not discussing. Maybe she had, she had a community.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Yes, but
and we just don't. It's not part of our tradition.
You're right. The Talmudic tradition, though, is that Lilith was not a human being. That she was the queen of the demons. That she was not really corporeal. She was a spirit force.
But she was interested in human men.
That's right. That's right. But that union did not produce anything that was going to fulfill the purpose of creation.
But maybe they left something behind.
Whatever, yes, the Gemara says, whatever they left behind, they were known as the Shedim, as the demons.
Nothing material?
No. At least that's the Midrashic understanding. Perhaps there's another explanation as well. Yeah.
So when the archaeologists come out with this type of calculation, I know there's a bigger issue with the carbon dating of how long the minerals and geology is in existence, but like, how reliable are those calculations, the fact that they say they're like 10,000 years old?
Well, listen, I'm not here to tell you that what scientists tell you is the absolute gospel. But I'm also skeptical of anyone who poo-poos scientific data saying, well, they really don't know because carbon dating is not so accurate.
No, I'm not saying I'm talking about carbon dating. That's more accurate because that's more scientific.
Yeah, I think that we have to give more credit to the scientific community before we dismiss them. In other words, we have to note that there's a certain credibility to a scientific community that studies things quite seriously and takes these studies seriously. That doesn't mean that it's a perfect, that everything they say is gospel. It means that there's a certain credibility that we have to take seriously, and there shouldn't be any reason for us not to accept what the consensus of the scientific community is.
So what's an explanation that just like God created man as an adult, God created the world sort of as an adult, and even though natural processes it would have normally taken like 10 billion years for geological formations to come up, God could have created them.
God created a mature universe, right? God created a mature universe. There's certainly the possibility, but that doesn't really explain all of the archaeological data. It doesn't explain the existence of societies that predate 6,000 years. That may explain why rock formations appear to be millions of years old when they're younger than that. But it doesn't explain human remains that go back much farther than 6,000 years. And to suggest that God put it there to trick us, like the theory that you might have heard when you were growing up, that God put dinosaur bones in the soil, even though there were never such thing as dinosaurs, because you're an Amichairus if you believe in dinosaurs, right? So to suggest that God put bones there, or to put archaeological remains of societies that never existed because he wanted to test us, sounds like a cruel joke, a cruel trick that God is trying with us. Why would God do that? Deliberately falsify data in order to be able to get us to think something that's not true. That doesn't make sense to me. God is emes, right? Everything about Hashem is emes. And so it's one thing to say that there could be some purpose in creating a mature universe, that nature in itself has the appearance of being quite old when it's newer than that, because there's a certain metaphysical benefit to the maturation of the universe, a rapid maturation. But to embed things that never existed, fossil remains and archaeological remains of societies, that doesn't make sense to me. Yeah.
Can I respectfully disagree?
Sure. It's a free country. We accept all disagreements.
In Parsha Re'eh, which we just read,
yes,
it says, if a false prophet comes to you and tells you, it says, don't believe him. It's a test Hashem sends you. Hashem actually creates situations where we're being tested, and it's written in Torah.
Hashem creates situations that he allows people who have free will to be able to enter into our purview, to be able to make sure that we remain faithful to Hashem. But you're dealing with a situation where God introduces people who represent themselves as something that they are not. Human beings will lie from time to time, or they will have delusions from time to time. That's what it means when it says that God is testing you. But for God himself to create something which has the appearance of something that never existed, that's a much further extension. You're right. Ki menaseh Hashem Elokeichem eschem, la'da'as ha'yishchem, ohavim es Hashem Elokeichem b'chol levavchem v'chol nafshechem, is what the Torah says. God sometimes presents us with challenges to our faith to see if we really love Hashem. But to say that by extension, God is also going to falsify bones and create things that never existed and put them in the soil to test us to see if we love Him, why does that a lack of love just because I believe the dinosaurs existed? Is it a fundamental tenet of faith that I have to believe that 6,000 years ago there was nothing and then everything came into existence with the advent of Adam and Chava? It's not a fundamental of my faith. Here you're going to have a false prophet who's going to come and tell you, let's worship other gods. That's a test from Hashem. He has a lot of evidence that seems to support what he's saying. He's a charismatic figure who performs great wonders and miracles because he's able to manipulate the forces of nature. God says, There are plenty of things within the purview of humankind that can deceive us. Listen, after all, God created the sun, the moon, and the stars. And look how many people strayed after those things. Because why? Because God creates the opportunity for mankind to go astray after things that may have the appearance of being godlike in nature. And he gives us the opportunity to exercise our free will to see if we're going to remain faithful, because otherwise there's no test. But for God to falsify data to see if what? Do we believe the world is 6,000 years old, older, or 10 million years old? Is that really a basic tenet of our worship of Hashem? Can I believe that the universe is 10 million years old and still believe in the God as the creator of the universe and still fulfill mitzvahs? Do I become less of a believer if I believe that Hashem, that dinosaurs once roamed the world? Why does Hashem need to test me that way? Why dafka that test? To me, that doesn't make sense.
Lack of clarity is a test. Why calling days something which happened? What we call day, it's a sun, moon cycle. Mm-hmm. Hashem calls what, but why Hashem calls days, day for one, day two, day before sun and moon was created? The lack of clarity is a test.
You're saying the lack of clarity in the words
Hashem
of the Torah themselves?
Yeah.
Well, of course, I mean, I don't know where you see that, that in itself is a test. God never says that the story of creation is a test for the Jewish people.
But if some people say it's a 7 days, actual days, the way we know them. It
but
can be, because in the first
the
couple of days there's no sun.
The fact is it's irrelevant, whether it's 7 days or not. Or
why?
7,
first couple of days could be a couple of millions.
I understand. But what I'm telling you is that it doesn't make a difference in my observance of God's laws and my belief in Hashem. See, that's the whole point I'm trying to make. There are certain tests that really are crucial. They make a difference as to whether I'm going to be faithful in my faith to God. Whether I continue to observe the commandments or not. Am I going to worship idols? Am I going to stray after other religious practices and other rituals? That I understand. Those things are tests in life. Whether my belief system and my religious practice system remains intact or not. But whether or not I believe that the world is a billion years old or 6,000 years old, how is that a test to my faith?
You start believing in science. You become follower of science instead of religion.
Why? Since when is it either or? Why are you creating this dichotomy where you have to choose one over the other? If scientific data indicates that the world is 15 billion years old, why is that a challenge to my faith necessarily? Can't I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world 15 billion years ago? Why can't I? The very ambiguity of the story of Bereshit lends itself to that.
The lack of clarity
lends itself. And it's not going to affect the way I serve Hashem. That belief that it's more than 6,000 years old doesn't taint the way that I choose to believe in Hashem and serve Him. That's why it's hard for me to believe that that's the test that God would choose. If God wanted to test me, He would present to me a test that would shake the very core of the way that I observe Judaism. Not to shake the core of whether the world is 6,000 years old or 15 billion years old. Yes? So that's why it's difficult for me to understand. Also the fact that God would not deliberately go ahead and create things which never existed. It's one thing for God to present the possibility for me to believe in other things and to go astray. That's what life is all about. That's what free will is all about. But for God to go out of His way and to create that which is false, that seems to be not real. Okay, so but your questions are all very well taken. But at this point, I think we'll take a pause. We've talked about the Nabataean Book of Agriculture. We've talked about the unreliability that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi suggests is the reason why we can't believe that. And we've also presented that the possibility that that argument will only work if you're dealing with the Nabataean Book of Agriculture, but not necessarily if you're working with scientific data that exists in the 21st century, which is based upon archaeological studies that are far more disciplined than the Nabataeans or the Indians. Okay, so that's just something to think about. And we will come back to this Amir Tz Hashem next week.